Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call. Leave all of your voicemails, your texts, your questions, anything you've got for us. Maybe you want to leave us some interesting ideas about Mo Bamba working out for the Bulls today. Maybe you've got some questions about some comments that he makes. Whatever it may be, send it to us there at 331-979-1369, or you can hit us up on social media as well. Well, Matt, anybody out there that said that they didn't want to see Warriors and Cavaliers in round four was sorely mistaken.
Dude,
last night.
You just took the words right out of my mouth, Jordan. What's going on, Bulls Nation? Yeah, I think I tweeted that somewhere in the third or fourth quarter last night while I was watching that game. It's like, and I had my doubts coming into this season about whether or not I wanted to see Cavs Warriors part four, and I certainly wouldn't necessarily have been heartbroken if we did end up getting something different. But somewhere towards the end of that game, where you saw the insane performance that LeBron James was putting forth for the umpteenth time in this playoff run, and the Warriors being the Warriors and Steph hitting 35 footers at the buzzer and KD just hitting anything and shooting over everyone, and the Draymond drama and the Tristan Thompson drama, and like, I'm sorry, but like, this is clearly our best case scenario for entertaining finals. As Bulls fans, as fans who don't necessarily have a dog in this race, anyone who thought that this wouldn't be fun was sorely mistaken. And people who thought that we were going to see a 20-point-plus Warriors blowout last night, like that crazy line from Vegas suggested, were sorely mistaken. I had a sneaky feeling that game one was going to be close. Turned out it was very close, so close that they needed an extra 5 minutes to decide the winner. But you know, all the factors, the Warriors kind of playing sloppy through these playoffs, not having Iggy. And I also knew, everybody was talking about like, oh, you know, LeBron always treats game one as a feel-out game. I knew that was not happening in these finals because LeBron knew he couldn't afford a feel-out game. I completely expected LeBron to come out and put his foot on the gas pedal. And that's exactly what he did. And we got a very entertaining game because of
so there is multiple layers to this first game that I think we need to get to. But the first thing overall I wanted to say, just right out of the gates, back and forth, LeBron James and Kevin Love, I'm pretty sure between LeBron, Kevin Love, and J.R. Smith, they were the only ones to shoot in that first quarter, at least to make a basket in that first quarter. It looked like LeBron was on a mission to say, you know what, I'm going to put my foot down here in this first quarter. We're not going to let Golden State run away with this in the beginning. It's going to be me and Kevin Love. We're going to establish the pace, the control, and the shot selection of this team and not give away shots to the other guys like maybe George Hill or try to work it into Tristan Thompson. I thought overall Kevin Love had a really nice game coming back from the concussion, 21 points, 13 rebounds. LeBron, obviously, ridiculous, 51 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. Just looking at that alone, outside of what happened maybe in the fourth quarter and overtime, which we can get to, I thought looking at Golden State's team too, Kevin Durant had an off night. And I know 26 points, it might not seem like an off night.
Yeah, it's funny that 26, and you can say that he had an off night when he puts up 26. But yeah, I mean, he was 8-22 overall and 1-7 from downtown. He made up for it by going 9-10 at the free throw line. But yeah, I mean, I would say compared to what we know Kevin Durant can do, it was kind of a quiet 26 points.
So outside of that, and the Klay Thompson injury, which, let's be honest here, Klay Thompson got really, really lucky.
It looked bad.
Something worse didn't happen.
When your foot plants into the court like that, and somebody runs into your leg and your knee twists, but the bottom of your leg doesn't, like that has ACL, MCL, all sorts of horrifying stuff written all over it. And, I mean, you're right. You're so lucky. And, I mean, J.R. Smith got a lot of hate last night for, you know, one big reason. People were talking about, like, oh, is that a dirty play from J.R.? I don't think that was a particularly dirty play from J.R. Smith. I honestly think he slipped on, like, a sweat spot or whatever on the court and fell into him. It's just kind of, I guess, a coincidence, you could say, that J.R. has done that multiple times throughout his career. Has been accidentally the cause of running into someone and injury.
Yeah, so it's lucky that Klay Thompson did end up coming back, and he seemed like he was fine at the end. I guess now let's get to the fourth quarter. Let's get to overtime as well. The fourth quarter, first of all, I know J.R. Smith is getting a ton of flack. He was getting it last night, and rightfully so, for being that stupid in the NBA Finals and not knowing what the score is, but...
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
Dude, George Hill... Man, you are getting paid $20 million to make those two free throws. You were brought in to make those free throws, and you missed the second one?
To me, that's just as unforgivable. Yeah, J.R. Smith probably should have gone back up with the ball when he got that offensive rebound. Let's also give J.R. Smith credit for getting an offensive rebound in the first place. I mean, if the Warriors get that ball... They have, you know, whatever it was, 3.5, 4, 4.5 seconds to get on the other side of the court and let KD, Steph, Klay, whoever, take a shot for the win, to win it in regulation. JR got the offensive rebound. He deserves credit for that. Definitely a blunder, but we don't even know if he would have made his putback attempt if he stayed where he was and went right back up with it. We don't know that. We don't know if he kicked it to LeBron, who was at the top of the key, if LeBron would have made a shot and gotten it off in time. You're right, George. To me, George Hill missing that free throw deserves just as much blame. I mean, and it reminds me, it's, you know, one day off today. June 1st is the anniversary of Karl Malone missing two free throws near the end of game one of the 97 NBA Finals. Jordan eventually won with a buzzer beater. Right before Jordan's buzzer beater, Malone missed two free throws that would have given the Jazz a two-point lead. And this is, you know, same story, essentially. NBA Finals, you're at the free throw line. George Hill is like an 80-plus percent career free throw shooter. You got to knock both of those down. Yes, JR was the laughingstock of NBA Twitter and the NBA and NBA world last night, and partfully... rightfully so. But I'm sorry. Give the guy credit for getting the offensive rebound in the first place and give George Hill some blame for missing that free throw.
George Hill wanted so badly for people to respect his game and to act like he was one of the better players in the NBA, and that's why he got paid partially because he went to a bad team, but they traded for him because they needed a competent point guard. And for a guy that normally is really good at shooting free throws, I'm pretty sure he's an above 80% free throw shooter for the season this year, to miss those two free throws are just, I would look at that and say that is even more unforgivable than J.R. Smith. And isn't it so classic that J.R., like, this is a classic story for J.R. Smith. Like, this goes in the timeline of every joke that's ever been made on Twitter about him. Like, this is perfectly in line with that. And if you just watch Tyronn Lue's reaction after the game, he had no explanation for it either. He couldn't, I don't think he was even at that press conference believing the fact that J.R. Smith still thought they were up by one. Just like in that moment, you think you're up one and he tries to dribble the ball out, and you look at LeBron's reaction too as well.
Well, and that's what made it worse, is that in the aftermath, not J.R. was caught on ABC's cameras saying, you know, if you read the lips in slow motion, I thought we were ahead after the end of regulation, and LeBron's looking at him like, dude, what the hell did you just do? And then after the game, J.R. Smith said, not knowing that his head coach, Ty Lue, was already at the podium saying, yeah, J.R. thought we were ahead. J.R. Smith tried to like change the story when he's talked to the media in the locker room and said, "Yeah, no, like, I didn't think we were ahead. I was trying to dribble it out to, you know, kick it out to LeBron or to get a better shot, you know, get out from among the trees. If I didn't know that we were tied and thought we were ahead, I would have just held the ball there in the paint and waited for somebody to foul me." So the coach, his teammates, and JR are all spinning different stories after the fact, when really it's clear as day. You can see JR saying, as LeBron's looking to him for an explanation, "I thought we were ahead." And then J.R. Smith tried to lie to cover it up, which just makes it look worse.
So between that, like, you obviously knew after that happened, game's tied, it's going to overtime. Like, was there any doubt for you that Golden State was just going to wipe the floor with them at that point? Like, I felt like they lost every bit of momentum. LeBron used every bit of juice he could possibly have done to pull out that first game. And then when they go into overtime, they just get creamed. I had no doubts in my mind that I was like, after overtime had hit, and we were getting ready to tip off with those final 5 minutes, I looked at my roommates and I said, "This is over. Golden State's going to win. They've got all the momentum." And I LeBron's probably sitting there still thinking about how dumb J.R. Smith is.
I didn't necessarily think it was over as soon as they went to OT. I thought whoever scored first or whoever went on a little mini run first in OT would win. Because the Warriors, for as great as they are, have also shown us over the course of this four-year dynasty of theirs that sometimes in late-game pressure cooker situations, if they get down by two possessions, maybe three possessions, they'll panic. And their offensive execution goes right out the window, and it's just Steph jacking up shots. And sometimes, even as good as Steph is, they're not good shots. So I thought if the Cavs could maintain and regain their composure in that little timeout between regulation and the start of OT, and LeBron or somebody could get them a couple of buckets to start OT, that the Cavs could still win that game. Absolutely, I thought the Cavs could still win that game in OT, because the Warriors, as I said, as good as they are, they kind of choke in late game situations. Which is a big reason why they brought Kevin Durant on board. But even still, since they brought Kevin Durant on board, they tend to choke in late-game situations. So because the Warriors struck first with that quick little 7-0 run to start OT, I was like, okay, yeah, it's over.
Another thing that I want to touch on real fast before we get to the last 2 seconds of the game, I got to give props to Kevon Looney for what he was asked to do in that game one, trying to have to guard LeBron. And I don't know, Kevin Durant has been getting a lot of flack for not wanting any part of LeBron. I know there's been multiple people who have pointed to that as something to continue to watch this series.
He was giving up on those switches mighty quickly.
And Kevon Looney was the only one that I felt like was going toe-to-toe with LeBron. And even at times when they were switching off to Steph, and Steph was trying, bless his soul, trying to guard LeBron, but even him, he was giving more effort than I thought. Kevin Durant, it looked like he was playing to not get embarrassed by LeBron more so than trying to defend and stop LeBron. And if that continues this series, like, we might see some type of different outcome. And I don't know what you feel like after game one and what happened here and how that might change the chemistry or the overall advantage for both teams in their locker rooms. But if Kevin Durant is scared or doesn't want any part of LeBron in this series, this could be sort of difficult for the Warriors, especially when they go on the road. So for me, not only did Kevin Durant not have a really great shooting night, he went 8-for-22, 9 boards, 6 assists, and he was a plus 17 in the plus minus. I get that, 26 points, but a combination of the defense of not wanting to guard LeBron, going 1-for-7 from 3-2, and missing a lot of buckets late in that second half, that to me is the biggest, I think, concern for the Warriors going into game two. But outside of that, I was just wondering your opinion on Kevin Durant and the switches that he was making. And for me, at least, just from the eye test, it looked like he didn't want any part of LeBron.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we talked about that kind of looking ahead to the series with the absence of Andre Iguodala for as long as that is. Missed game one. I guess we'll wait and see if we hear anything today or tomorrow, and then early Sunday. Because we got 2 days in between now, so Sunday game two is not till Sunday. Maybe the Warriors will get Iguodala back, but with Iguodala not being there to be the primary focus of when you're on the court, you're guarding LeBron. That's your only opportunity or your biggest responsibility. Without Iggy, Durant would, as we assumed, be asked to do more of the guarding of LeBron. If the Warriors can pass that responsibility off to somebody else, I think it benefits the Warriors, because KD's a decent defender, but he's not fantastic. And you want KD to be primo 100% energy KD on the offensive end when if you want and need to go ISO just to get a bucket, as opposed to playing the pace and space and, you know, Steph running running things show, give the ball to KD and let him get a bucket. You want KD to have the energy to be able to do that. And he's not going to have that same level of energy if he's chasing LeBron around and getting ran into by LeBron every other possession. You're right. I think Looney, to his part, did a respectable job when he was asked to. But how is it that we're 15 minutes into this conversation, we haven't talked about the best LeBron stopper and the highlight of last night, and that is one JaVale McGee. Come on, baby. Six big minutes for the original OG Shaq and a Fool. I think it was great. Like, McGee had a couple of string of possessions where he was scoring at the scoring at his end, making stops on the other end, and then he got a pass down on the low post, didn't know where he was, took a dribble, turned around, and got deflected and rejected by the rim. And that dude's like 8 feet tall.
It's kind of unreal.
But he did, on like two straight trips down the court, play some pretty impressive defense on LeBron.
The funny thing is JaVale McGee, I think they were saying on the broadcast, had only played a total of like 30 minutes in the entire playoff so far to step in, getting
Yeah, 3 minutes.
Oh, three minutes.
No, 3 minutes collectively in the Houston series.
3 minutes collectively in the Houston series. And then
right.
So, to me, to come off, I know he only played 6 minutes, but he did have two big buckets. I look at that, and I think going into game two, before we get that, let's talk about overtime and what happened in the last 2 seconds. Foul on Tristan Thompson to stop Sean Livingston from taking that shot. Obviously not happy about that. Even before then, when LeBron put that big block on Steph after Steph was trying to show him up a little bit after they went on that run in overtime, LeBron wasn't having any of that. And I think he even said that to Steph and pushed Steph off of him. And Steph could tell he was getting under his skin because he kept just mouthing as they played the slow replay, kept saying, "I just want to talk to you. I just want to talk. Like, what's going on?" And
LeBron started that by staring down Steph after blocking him.
True.
Right? Like, let's all agree that LeBron started that. Buddy, your team is down whatever it was, 8 points, and they're is 45 seconds left in this game. You got the block. Your team's going the other way. Fast break, transition. And instead of joining them, you're going to take the time to just stare down Steph?
Oh, give me a break. The dude had 51 points. And the game was over at that point.
What was it?
It was.
I'm sorry. I believe Reggie Miller scored 8 points in a matter of seconds at some point in NBA history. Dude,
what are we talking about here?
Game is not over until that clock strikes zero. It's like the same thing as the Cavs getting upset that Sean Livingston took that shot, as opposed to just, oh, I don't know, dribbling until the end of the shot clock and then handing the ball back to Cleveland. That game was not over. This is the NBA Finals. You shoot because there is a shot clock. And if you're LeBron, how about instead of trying to look like a badass and staring down Steph, who is not in the play, off the court even, you get your butt back in the game and try to cut the lead. The game was not over. There were like 45 seconds left.
Cut that nonsense out. What were they up at that point? 8? 10?
Yeah.
45 seconds left with the team that... And keep in mind, too, everything that happened before then. We're talking about J.R. Smith having the potential go-ahead point there. George Hill missing that free throw, too, plays a factor into, like, they're down 8, 45 seconds left, whatever it was, 10 points. At that point, LeBron knew it. It was over. Like, come on. Like, the dude put up 51 points. What else is he supposed to do? Like, run back down the court so he can lose by 6?
Irrelevant to me. Yeah, he put up 51 points, and it was a hell of a game from LeBron, and it's too bad that with the way things unfolded, he didn't get the W. But in that moment, I was just so turned off by that. That's one of the character flaws about LeBron that drive me crazy that make it hard to root for him sometimes. Like, buddy, if you want to throw in the towel and lose this game, and you don't want to jump back into that transition offense that your team's got going the other direction because you've already decided that this game is over and you've lost, that's one thing. But to stare down Steph like that after a block, what are you trying to do? You trying to look tough? Sorry, buddy, you're about to lose this game. What are you trying to do? You trying to pick a fight? Sorry, buddy, you're about to lose this game. And picking a fight would be the dumbest possible thing you could do right now. Like, I just don't know what LeBron was trying to accomplish.
And I think that's more credit to maybe Steph Curry getting under LeBron's skin a little bit. And so outside of that, him and Steph were chirping at each other. Klay Thompson wanted to get in the mix. And come on, Klay Thompson, get out of here. Like, nobody's scared of you. So just calm it down there.
Maybe pot dealers who have a short supply.
All right, let's talk about the foul, though, on Tristan Thompson that escalated with him and Draymond. I don't know. Like, yeah, you can be aggravated as the Cavs for Sean Livingston taking that shot, but I mean, he had to get it off. The clock was running out.
That's what I'm saying.
He could have held the ball, sure, but at the same time, I don't see why it had to escalate there with 2-point-some seconds left. I think this was more of a show on the referee's part, which we can get to in a second. This was more of a show on, like, 2.6 seconds left, 2.4 seconds left. The game was over, and the referees had to make it about them. And I feel like at points escalated this fight. Like, what was the need to throw Tristan Thompson out there? What was the need
that
to do that?
That was the most bogus ejection I've ever seen.
And
I have no idea what that was.
If he gets suspended for that, I'm going to be livid, because
There's no way. I think there's a greater likelihood that just because rules are rules, Kevin Love will get suspended for leaving the bench when he was not in the game, when that scuffle was going on.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that. And
yeah, it was all over Twitter last night. It was, you know, freeze frames. Hey, look, Kevin Love, he's on the court and he's not supposed to be technically. That's an automatic suspension.
So that on top of two, I guess another thing that's kind of unprecedented is, like, Tristan Thompson was already thrown out of the game before he had thrown the ball and pushed Draymond Green.
Yeah. Yeah, he got ejected and then shoved the ball in Dre's face and then kind of
punched
him.
It's funny, the announcers were like, well, the explanation to us was that they couldn't give Tristan Thompson another flagrant because he was already ejected.
To me, I think that the officiating crew, which had a rough night last night, I think the NBA should just look past it. Do not give any suspensions. Do not issue any extra texts or extra flagrants. It's the NBA Finals, okay? Things are supposed to get chippy. These teams aren't supposed to be giving each other hugs at the end of the fourth quarter, at the end of overtime, no less. It happened. Move on. Nobody got seriously hurt. A half a punch was thrown. Kevin Love was technically 4 feet differently, you know, located from where he was supposed to be. Let's forgive all and move on and don't suspend anyone, because we just got a very entertaining game one in a series that most people thought was going to be a laugher. So let's keep that entertainment level going. Let's keep that contentiousness going. Let's keep this bubbling at the frickin' surface, because that'll lead to some more entertaining basketball.
I agree, too. I'm with you. And remember the outrage when Draymond Green got suspended, too, at the height of the playoffs? Like, that's what I reminded of, and I was...
Terrible. Terrible decision by the league.
I completely agree. And so I think this is more so the referee's fault for escalating this. Like, there was no need to stop the game with 2.4 seconds left and to go to the review and let this escalate the way it did. And so I don't know. I would be very shocked if the NBA suspended Kevin Love for coming off the bench like that. More so, I would like to know if the explanation was just more so to protect his teammates. And things got crazy. Like, there was bodies flying all over the place at one point with that little of time left. It was funny because LeBron and Steph were standing next to each other sort of as this replay was going on and talking to each other, and it seemed like things had smoothed over a little bit. But I'm interested to see what they say about Tristan Thompson, whether he's going to just get a heavy fine, or because this I feel like this has never happened before. Like, a guy does something extra after being already tossed out of the game. And to this extent, like, a fight, I don't know. I don't know what the NBA is going to rule on this. I hope I'm with you. I hope that they don't do anything, that they just say, you know what, both sides were wrong. Let's just go with a clean slate in game two. No extra texts, no suspensions. And if the league wants to heavily fine Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love, sure, go ahead and do that. Same thing with Draymond Green. That's fine. But to take those guys out of game two, to give them a suspension for something that happened in a part of the game that should never even have been stopped, I think would be madness.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement there. And real quick, before we move on to our lone Bulls topic of the day, speaking of the refs, we haven't even talked about the most, perhaps the most controversial part of last night's game that people can't stop talking about, which was the review of the initial charge that LeBron took, then changed to blocking foul late in the fourth quarter because the officials weren't 100% positive and on the same page about whether or not LeBron was in the restricted area. And there's that rule saying if you're not sure if they're in the restricted area, you can go to the replay. And then once you're in the replay, you can also make a determination and change the call as to whether it is a blocking foul or whether it is a charge. Everybody on Twitter who is a Cavs supporter or a stickler for the rules was looking at that and saying, clearly there should not have been any confusion with the fact that LeBron was well outside the restricted area. So they shouldn't have even gone to the replay that allowed them to then say, well, he was outside the restricted area, but yeah, LeBron wasn't set. He was definitely moving. He didn't get to the spot in time, and it was a blocking foul, not a charge. And they changed that call. The Warriors get two free throws at a time when they desperately needed them, and it looked like the Cavs were about to seize control. Changes the way the rest of the fourth quarter shakes out. Me, personally, my opinion, I'm glad they went to the replay. I don't care about the semantics of, well, technically you're not supposed to go to the replay unless it's, you know, a place where they need to check to see if he was outside or inside the restricted area. And LeBron was clearly out. I don't care. I care about the refs getting the call right. There was a lot of bad officiating last night. A lot of calls that were, you know, Kevin Durant got soft calls in his favor. Kevin Durant had a clean swipe of LeBron late in the game that he got called on a foul for. It was bad both ways. But in that instance, all these people on Twitter complain, but against the rules, they're not even supposed to go to the replay. I don't care. If they accidentally went to the replay at a time when they weren't supposed to, and in doing so actually got the call right on the court, that's all I care about. It was a blocking foul, not a charge. You got the right outcome. I don't care how you got the right outcome. You got the right outcome.
I think for me, it can be argued both ways, whether or not that actually was a blocking foul or not. Obviously, he was moving a little bit, and that's part of the conversation is whether...
Oh, you can't argue whether or not that was a blocking foul. That was clearly a blocking foul.
To go to the replay booth, whatever it is, to go to the replay screen and do this, whether it's inside or outside of the restricted area, I think is just a crazy, crazy misplay by all of those referees. Like, how did you not know that you're not supposed to go to the replay monitor on a rule like that? You're in the, like the same way we're talking about players in the NBA Finals, you're in the NBA Finals. You got assigned to this game. This is the height of the NBA right now. And you're telling me that you don't know when you're allowed to go to the monitor and when you're not? Like, come on. Like,
no, I think they know. I think they're very well aware of the rule. And they said, well, we got to check to see if he was in or outside the restricted area. And maybe that was the refs just fudging to say, because the ref who made the charge call had a different view. So maybe one of the other officials said, actually, no, but, you know, like, that wasn't a charge. I wasn't the one to make the call. You were the one to make the call. I had a better angle. That was definitely a blocking foul. So let's go and look and see if he was in the restricted area. And then once we're in that replay zone, we can change the call from a charge to a block. Maybe they had a little conference, and that's how they got to that decision. And if that's what they did, I'm fine with it because, as I said, they got the correct call. So who the hell cares?
See, I'm not. I'm not okay with that because if you're trying to check whether or not he's in the restricted area, that's part of the... Like, we're talking about it. That's part of the rules. So if that's part of the rules and you're a referee, like, that's what you're there for. And clearly, you watch the replay, and even in real time, LeBron is 3-4 feet outside of the restricted area. Tyronn Lue said the same thing.
We can agree that the rule is dumb, the way it's written and the way it played out last night. And that technically it played out in a way that unless they're really blind and couldn't tell that LeBron was well outside the restricted area, they went to the replay when they shouldn't have. We can agree that that rule is stupid. But they got the call correct. Why is that not what people care about? It was a blocking foul. They got the correct blocking foul call. The result of the play panned out as it should. This is a fair and just world. On a night when, as I said, the refs had a tough night, that's a call they actually got right. So why are people complaining?
I think it more so goes to the fact that maybe they decided that they made a mistake, or that ref that did call the charge immediately decided he made a mistake and that wasn't supposed to be it. But still, like... It just blows my mind that we're in the NBA Finals and then you're using a rule to basically justify why you went to the monitor when really you shouldn't have gone to the monitor. That's my biggest thing. Like, I get it. I like that they made the right call. Sure, most people will say that was a blocking foul rather than a charge. Okay, I'm fine with that. But missed calls happen all the time. I just don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me that you can have a crew of referees in this game going to check to the monitor, checking a rule that you shouldn't be able allowed to check. Like, that's a missed call. Okay, that's part of the game. A missed call is a missed call. You shouldn't be able to go to the monitor just because it's on LeBron, because it's the Warriors, because you're what, 5-10 minutes before the end of the game in the fourth quarter? Like, you should have to follow the same set of rules for everything. And I just don't understand how they can get away with and justify, oh, well, we were checking if he was inside or outside the restricted. That's bullshit.
Okay. No, I agree, Jordan. I said the rule is dumb the way it's laid out. So change the rule, Adam Silver. Starting next season, change the rule and allow refs to go to the replay to determine if a foul was a charge or a block. Just rewrite the language of that issue. Problem solved. But as of last night, the thing I care about is getting the call right on the court, and they got the call right on the court. So let's all friggin' move on.
So I'm interested. I want to throw this at you too. So now, does Tyronn Lue use that in this series? Every time LeBron goes to the basket, Tyronn Lue should be on the sideline screaming every time for a foul, because especially if guys are trying to pull a charge, if any of those calls happen, Tyronn Lue should just be jumping up and down on the sidelines screaming at the refs for the entire series, because that's the precedent that the refs set.
And I think he will, and I think we already heard Ty Lue give a loud part of his mind to the refs last night after the game, and he will most likely receive a very hefty fine. I think we can all agree that J.R. Smith should be paying that fine. And, you know, J.R. Smith, George Hill split the bill on the fine for criticizing the rest. But you're right. Ty Lue absolutely will be looking for that from here on out.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a little discussion, too, to wrap up the weekend about the Bulls. Maybe some stuff about Michael Porter Jr. as well. Topics that we didn't touch on, or at least ideas that we didn't talk about in yesterday's episode. Maybe touch on Mo Bamba meeting with the Bulls as well. So stay right here with us on Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. All right, so we're back with our final segment before the weekend. We talked a lot about prospects yesterday, Matt, in our mailbag segment, anywhere from Trae Young to Michael Porter Jr. And even in our first segment, we spent a bulk of the time talking about what it means for Michael Porter Jr.'s medicals and whether or not if it's true that he is sliding up and down draft boards. And that was a particular concern for a lot of people, was his medicals. And the one team that we were talking about more specifically was the Dallas Mavericks and being interested in him at the beginning. The one thing that we didn't talk about was the possibility that this is a play by other teams behind, say, number six, number seven, to sort of gamesmanship some of these teams and say, well, yeah, I don't think you're going to really want him. We don't really want him. So hoping that he slides down. Do you think that there's any possibility that's going on? Because we've gotten a lot of texts and a lot of feedback over the last 24 hours where people say that they don't buy in to all of this garbage about him, his medicals not checking out completely, that this is just a ploy for teams behind the Bulls to get Michael Porter Jr. to slide, or for them not to take him and be worried. This is an interesting one, because this could be for sure something like this happening. What are your thoughts on that as far as maybe Cavs, Knicks, etc.?
I mean, I think it's certainly plausible that at least one or even a handful of teams out there in the middle and back stages of the lottery are putting those kind of words out there to say, you know, we're not so high on Porter Jr. We're really worried about his medicals. We're worried about the back. We don't know if we can trust him. We're afraid he's a bust. To try to coerce and, you know, sort of plant an earwig in the ears of other teams so that they screw with their logic and their draft analysis that they have done in-house and their scouting teams, and try to sway people's opinions because they do want him to fall so that they can steal who they believe to be a great top five worthy guy in this draft. That being said, yes, I think that some of that might be going on and smoke screens, etc. I don't know if any of that kind of stuff and those moves are ever actually effective. I think NBA teams and front offices and scouting groups are smart enough to know we don't care about the talk that's going on outside of us unless it is involved with a team saying, hey, we're making calls because we're interested in a trade. Up, down, whatever. Okay, well, let's talk. Outside of moving up and down in the draft, the other talk about actual prospects and what we like and what we don't like, teams have their scouting systems in place and front offices have their opinions and they have their draft boards. And I don't think any of that smokescreen kind of talk that might be a strategy of some front offices to try to get guys to fall, I don't think, you know, grand scheme, I don't think that actually does or affects anything.
Yeah, and I just think it's kind of bizarre that he wouldn't release all the medical information to all of the teams, or he's been kind of weird about it. I don't know if that's more of a play by his agent, people surrounding him, which I'm sure it is. Talking himself up in the NBA Combine, too. This happens all the time, though, where teams maybe fall in love with a guy and they leak information. Like, this happens in every sport, too. So I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if there's teams like the Cavaliers who are behind the Bulls and the Knicks, and even the 76ers at number 10, there are probably teams that are like, you know, what if he slides to us? We're taking him. And maybe we can get some of these teams to second, third, fourth guess themselves about taking him at their slots, too. I think this happens all the time, not only inside the NBA, but as fans and as reporters and as writers and people in the media. We get so much information now, especially over the last 2, 3, 4 years of prospects and where things are going and rumors and reports that are coming out from different teams. And at the end of the day, it's a lot of it could be smokescreens. And truly, I think outside of the top three, we really don't know where any of these other guys are going to go. I think this NBA draft is a little bit more solidified, maybe 1 through 4 than it has been in the past couple of years. But I don't know. I will continue to reiterate what I said about Michael Porter Jr. is if the Bulls take him at 7, fine. I'm okay with that. That's totally cool with me. But the medicals better check out. And if they don't, that's a huge concern. And so if they don't do that and they decide to pass on Michael Porter Jr., I'm okay with that too, unless it's Trae Young. So I think getting all worked up and looking at some of these mock drafts from high analysts, even Woj from ESPN, who was talking crazy about him sliding almost to the back half of the lottery because of things that he's heard, that's completely different. I mean, you can go to different sources everywhere across the internet and find different placements for Michael Porter Jr. and different justifications for why they think he's going to slip or why they think he's going to get moved up. Same thing with any other prospect. So I would say take it all with a grain of salt until we actually get a full report on why teams might not be so high on him or maybe other prospects that they're high on. I think it's a combination of smoke screens, a lot of information going on, and still a couple weeks away from the draft, just trying to maybe justify their narrative in terms of what players go where, rather than maybe the actuality of what teams are actually thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always going to be some of that. As I said, I would be surprised if, you know, certain teams putting out smoke screens about players, in this case Michael Porter Jr. and his health, I would be surprised if a team let themselves, if a team felt one way, in this case we're saying, you know, we really like Michael Porter Jr., we're going to take Michael Porter Jr., knowing the risk, I would be surprised if that team would let the talk going on among draft experts, quote unquote, and other teams' front offices sway them from their decision just because they're hearing talk. If a team values the ceiling of Porter Jr. over the risk of his injury, they will take him, regardless of what everybody else is saying.
I'm with you. I think so, too. And so, obviously, that plays a factor, but just keep that in mind when you're reading and listening to people talk about whether or not he's going to slide, and that goes for any other prospect, too.
What do you think? Do you think somehow MPJ slides out of the top 10? Like, give me a percentage chance that likelihood that MPJ slides out of the top 10. Because I'm saying like 3%.
I was going to say, yeah, maybe like less than 10% chance. And like I told you yesterday, I said, you know, if the Bulls decide to pass on Michael Porter Jr. for whatever reason, he's still there, probably bet most of my money that the Cavaliers will swoop him up.
Cavs will take him. LeBron is on his way out the
door. And even
door.
If LeBron isn't, I mean, like that.
Even if he isn't right now, they still need a contingency plan. And Porter Jr. has the highest upside of any of those guys at 8.
And who's the perfect man to maybe play, even if it is only short term, mentor to Michael Porter Jr.? And that's LeBron. So I think sliding past 8 really doesn't make any sense. If we're talking about getting to 7, there's probably a high possibility that he's going to be there. But getting past 8, I don't really see it. I think it makes too much sense if he's there for the Cavaliers to take him. I would say less than 10% chance of him falling out of the top 10. So, and the more and more that I read, the more that I listen to people, it sounds like a lot of teams, like we had said yesterday, are really high on Mohamed Bamba, and that's going to be a guy that's going to get taken over Michael Porter Jr. I think the team to really look at, like we said yesterday, is Dallas and what rumors and things are coming out of there, because that's one of the teams that I think, if Michael Porter Jr. is selected before the Bulls, that's one team that he could go to. And I also did see something. This might be a little ridiculous, and I don't know if this is if medicals do clear and everything's okay, that the King. I saw a report that the Kings might take him at number 2, which is kind of ridiculous. Like to pass
that's crazy.
Luka Doncic.
That's crazy.
So I was like, yeah, I don't know.
Then again, the Kings might be one of the front offices across the league that has just as many, if not more, recent blunders than the Bulls. So.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that's going to about do it here. Mo Bamba is meeting with the Bulls right now as we record this. So on Monday, we'll talk all of the reaction from him, as well as some of the comments, how his draft workout looked, and so much more. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call. Leave all of your voicemails, your questions, anything you got for us. 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.